The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Every morning is a new opportunity to take in the news of the day and the challenges of life and try to make sense of it all. Right now, we've got a show that tackles the topics and asks what you think. So get ready to start your day with a bold look at history as it happens. Let's learn, live, and sometimes laugh together. It's the Mark Davis Show on 660 AM, The Answer.
And a good morning, everybody, on this Thursday, the 23rd day of June, 2022. Welcome to the 9 o'clock hour, our final hour together today before we hand things over to Mike Gallagher. And so here's our next day of vigil. I'm just sitting here, eyes peeled, ears peeled, you know, toward social media, toward the TV box. Is it about to happen? Is Roe v. Wade about to go down in the form of the Dobbs case? Or maybe the Washington State case involving Coach Joe, who wanted to just kneel on the football field after the game is over to kneel in prayer, a religious freedom case. And a Second Amendment case, did the state of New York make it way too hard for you to get permission to have a gun on you to protect yourself in New York? So all of these are sort of a twist in the breeze. They could come at any moment, so we could just sit here and just wait and drum our fingers, or we could do something particularly meaningful and take a look at a justice whom we know, as much as you can know anything, whom we know will not be a problem for constitutionalism, who we know will rule the right way. And I don't mean the pro-life way. I don't ever need the Supreme Court to reflect my politics or my moral beliefs. It's a constitutional issue. Is there a right to abortion in the Constitution? There is not. I know Clarence Thomas will recognize this. I know Samuel Alito will recognize this. I hope that Kavanaugh and Barrett and Gorsuch will, and John Roberts, who knows what kind of coin flip that is. That's why there is so much suspense. But with regard to Clarence Thomas, on an occasion of even greater significance, because today is his 74th birthday, it's a pleasure to talk to a gentleman named Michael Pack. And maybe you've heard of him with regard to a film that's been out for a bit called Created Equal, an incredible, inspiring look at Justice Thomas in his own words. No Supreme Court justice is like heavily interviewed and spends an enormous amount of time in front of TV cameras or film cameras. But Mr. Pack had this wonderful access to Clarence Thomas, and the film version is remarkable. And now here we are in book form on the occasion of the publication of Created Equal, a really close and personal look at this magnificent constitutionalist. Michael Pack is with us. Mr. Pack, welcome. How are you doing, sir?
I'm doing well. Thank you for having me on your show, Mark.
So tell me how you wound up with the incredible good fortune of this kind of access, this kind of relationship with Justice Thomas, that you just happen to be there as he just spills all kinds of details about his life and his reasoning.
Well, it is good fortune. It was really an honor. It began a few years ago when some of Justice Thomas's friends became concerned that the left and his enemies were telling his life story, caricaturing him, really. And the HBO was about to come out with a movie, Confirmation, with Kerry Washington and Anita Hill, another attack on Justice Thomas, really. So they wanted to respond, and they reached out to me, and I didn't know that much about Justice Thomas, really. I remember the hearings, of course, from 91. But once you meet him, you can see right away that he's got a tremendous personality, a huge laugh, a great voice, and a great teller of tales. And his life was a great and inspiring story. So right away, I wanted to tell it. And it evolved into what you just said, that it was all based on a very long interview with Justice Thomas and his wife, Ginny. Over 30 hours, over a few months, they're the only interviews. Justice Thomas tells his story directly to camera, you know, with recreations and other things mixed in, but he tells the story directly to camera so you hear what he thinks about his life and issues like Roe, like abortion. And it was all boiled down to a two-hour film. It was in movie theaters. 110 movie theaters did really well. It was on PBS, nationally broadcast streaming, and it's streaming still. Your listeners can still see it on Amazon, on Salem, on Fox Nation, and buy the book on Amazon and Barnes & Noble. But what we couldn't get in the film, my co-editor Mark Palette and I wanted to get into a book. So things that weren't things from that very long interview that we didn't get into the two-hour film are now in the book. It's 95% new material. It's really based on our audience and listeners asking for more. And I think this is it. I mean, it's more about everything, more about his feelings about Roe, about judging, about, as you said, the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence and the principles underlying the country. And it's great to hear it from him. And it's and his basic life story is so inspiring, coming from dire poverty in the Deep South, the segregated South, the highest court in the land, the twists and turns. Is an inspiring and moving story.
And the film and the book are called Created Equal, and Michael Pack is the driving force behind both. So let's go right prior to his ascendancy to the Supreme Court, because we're going to talk about the hearings and the whole Anita Hill thing in a second. But tell me a little bit about what we might not know about Clarence Thomas's his climbing the rungs of the ladder to his Supreme Court. Tell me about the Clarence Thomas of the 70s and 80s, the path he took that put him in a position to be a Supreme Court pick.
It was a very complicated and back and forth path and very dramatic. I mean, which is why it was a great subject for a film. But you know, he began in real poverty. His to do this quickly and not quite do it justice. His father left before he could remember. His mother couldn't take care of him, and she left him. She brought him from when he was eight, him and his brother, to his grandfather to raise, and his grandfather gave him tough love, hard work, decent values, sent him to parochial school, you know, segregated all black, and the nuns reinforced those values. Then he went off. He wanted to be a priest. Not a lot of people know that. He was in the seminary, and it was only in the late 60s when he experienced some racist remarks, for example, about Martin Luther King, that made him suddenly question all his beliefs, as many people did in the 60s, and he completely flipped. He had a radical period. He embraced black power. As he said, he was an angry black man. His grandfather kicked him out of his home. He was forced to go where he can get a full scholarship, Holy Cross, where he was very active and helped create the Black Student League, participated in a walkout, invited a Panther to college. And then the next part of the movie and the book talks about how he came back from that to the core values his grandfather and those Irish nuns raised him with, until he finally, in 1980, voted for Ronald Reagan and worked in the Reagan administration. And once that came out, and Juan Williams wrote a piece about his unorthodox views, such as opposing affirmative action and busing, he was attacked by the left from then on, the 80s on.
No, of course. And the groundwork had been laid with just a couple of years earlier where the horrific treatment of Robert Bork was so bad that it became a verb. To bork somebody was to ruin a nomination with unfair personal and made-up attacks. So that playing field is striped, and here comes Clarence Thomas, the most dangerous man in America, a conservative constitutionalist African-American man. So when George H.W. Bush announces his selection, I think in July of 1991, you kind of know how it's going to go, but no one could have foreseen the whole Anita Hill dust up. And let me ask it in the following way. Today, you know, in a free country, you know, where everybody can feel the way they wish, Anita Hill enjoys a status of enormous fame and fortune, welcome anywhere as a symbol of female victimization of sexism when it is a completely unresolved matter. There was never any factual finding that she was telling the truth. And the thing that I remember from the hearings, that I remember the most vividly, is that of everybody who knew them both, of everybody who knew both Clarence Thomas and Anita Hill, 100% of those people believed him.
Good memory. That's true. Clarence Thomas, after the confrontation, the testimony of both Anita Hill and Clarence Thomas, they had people testifying in their defense. And Clarence Thomas had people who knew them both and testified to his behavior. Anita Hill was unable to come up with anybody. The people that testified for her were friends from other walks, other parts of her life. That's right. And after those charges were leveled and Clarence Thomas gave this dramatic high-tech lynching speech where he very forcefully rebutted them, two-thirds of the country believed him, including African-Americans, including women. And that, which is why the Senate, you know, voted for him, really. It's only the subsequent years where the left has continued its relentless attack that they have shifted public opinion and some people's memory of what happened there, which is why the book and the film are so important.
And so it's October of 1991 after some really long hearings, and he is confirmed to be an associate justice of the Supreme Court by a vote of 52-48. And his legacy begins, a legacy now of more than 30 years. I think if you ask people about Clarence Thomas, just to have sort of glancing attention, it'll be that he's a constitutionalist. Stylistically, it's a fascinating life story, but I want to have you address something that a ton of people have said, and whether this is a good thing or a bad thing, and what he says about it, and that is that he's not real vocal. That if you listen, we now get to listen to all kinds of oral arguments, and people say, "Wow, Justice Thomas virtually never asks a question." A, is that true? And if so, why?
Well, he explains this both in the film and even at greater length in the book, and it's his vision of how oral arguments should work. He believes that each advocate, it is in fact the case that each advocate in a Supreme Court case is given 30 minutes in oral argument, mm-hmm. and time is taken away from that with every question a judge asks, and if judges, justices argue among themselves, that comes out of his time. He thinks the advocates are entitled to make their case, so that when it's over, they feel they had their shot. And he doesn't like the sort of thing where they're interrupted and one justice interrupts another. And so he has been asking way more questions in the post-COVID world. During COVID, all the arguments were on Zoom or on video conferencing, and it went in an orderly way. And that was more coherent with Justice Thomas's view of how it should be. And he asked many questions. And since that's still the pattern, he's still asking more questions. But I think the more important thing, really, is we see, as you said, we hear the oral argument, we think that's what it's all about, and we have in our mind a vision that it's like To Kill a Mockingbird or some other courtroom drama where it's all going to be presented to the jury. But this is an appeals court. It is not that kind of a court, and it's mostly done through paper, through circulating opinions, like the leaked opinion of Justice Alito's that you referred to earlier. Ugh. And Justice Thomas has written more opinions than any Supreme Court justice. I think by now it's over 700. And year to year, it's usually double any other justice. And he writes more opinions. He's very vocal in the intra-court discussions. And he's really a leader. Many people call it the Thomas Court. So he is not quiet in that way. He's been quiet for many years in oral argument because of his sense of what that should be. And because he doesn't care what people think of him.
Which may be one of the most endearing things about him. Michael Pack is here, author of and the man behind the film version of Created Equal, a story of Clarence Thomas revealing much of himself. Just so you know, we're paying attention. No huge ruling has come down. If it does, we will let you know. So you said that Justice Thomas in your company does riff to some degree on his thoughts about Roe v. Wade. How much can he do that? Let's go back to the hearings a minute. Somebody asked him, I don't know who it was. They said, have you ever had conversations about Roe v. Wade? And I don't know if I misunderstood the question or if he kind of seemed to say, I haven't really talked about that. I don't know if I believe that then. What did he mean then? And what has he said about it since?
Well, he meant, and I think he did say, the first part of the hearings before the Anita Hill revelations or accusations mm-hmm. were very focused on Roe and natural law, which was another way of getting his opinions on Roe and other things, but a lot on Roe. So he spoke about it a lot. I mean, he said that, of course, he knows something about abortion and he heard about Roe, but what he hadn't done was he hadn't examined the case in detail and thought through the constitutional arguments, which Justice Alito, does in his opinion now. Mm-hmm. That's what Justice Thomas hadn't done back in 1991. And he wasn't going to opine on it because, as you said in the intro, it's not about what you think about abortion. It's about whether it's constitutional. A wholly different question. He had opinions about abortion, but he hadn't really thought through the constitutional arguments, which he takes seriously, not like something maybe you and I might opine off the cuff. He thinks that, you know, for that, you have to actually do research, give it thought, work through the cases, as Justice Alito does. And he had not done that, and he didn't want to opine until he did that.
And maybe that's why, and this is a spectacular point, and maybe that's why in every hearing, every confirmation hearing, you see nominees do a lot of tap dancing, and it looks like they just don't want to answer the question, because as soon as they answer the question, all they're going to do is anger half of the senators, when in fact they are not in the business of slinging hot takes over a beer. These are justices who are at some point going to have to take a fine-toothed comb to this, and they just don't want to do that in a Senate hearing room. They'll do that once they reach the court.
That is well put. That is exactly what they want to do. And of course, you know, their opponents, whoever they be, have a different agenda.
Gotcha. Exactly. All right. In our last couple of minutes, because you mentioned her, and I didn't know how much we could talk about her. I've met Jenny Thomas, and I think she is remarkable. Mm. She is a force of nature. To the surprise of no one, I met her at a Tea Party gathering here in North Texas, into where you will find her. And it was 2009. And now she's catching all kinds of holy hell because she was part of the community of Americans, no small number, who thought Donald Trump got screwed and should have really aggressively gone after the validity of the 2020 result. And now people are dogging Justice Thomas about this, meaning surely he can't rule on things like this because of his wife's feelings. And I would say this of a liberal justice. If there's a liberal justice who is married, spouses get to have their own world and their own beliefs. Let me have you weigh in a little bit on the whole Jenny Thomas issue of late.
Well, that's true. And there are many liberal justices with liberal spouses who are very politically active. My co-writer of the book, Mark Paletta, has written a lot on this. And there's one prominent judge in the Ninth Circuit who I think now deceased, but his wife was head of the Southern California ACLU. And she put her name on an amicus brief on a case that he didn't recuse himself from. So, and they saluted her activism. Isn't it great that she's, you know, working for the ACLU for the cause of truth and justice? Yeah. That she was celebrated. Jenny is derided. I mean, you can't have one standard for one and another standard for the other. Of course, we are moving this country just in that terrible direction. So, in fact, recusal isn't really based on knowing someone with opinions. There are rules of recusal, and it's based on having, for instance, a financial interest or a legal tie to something, not just everyone having an opinion. Otherwise, you know, he'd have to recuse himself, and so would many justices, from many, many, many things. Yeah, you know, how can the courts work under that kind of recusal regime? So that's right. It's two standards. They're really using this to get to Justice Thomas, to mock him, to devalue the court, to minimize him and his influence. And it's surprised me how relentless it was on Jenny in the last few weeks. I mean, I'm in the D.C. area, and so many pieces in the New York Times and the Washington Post, sometimes on the front page, with actually no new information, is remarkable.
Shocker. Is it remarkable? Let me send everybody to the work of Michael Pack, our own company, Salem. I'm so glad to send you to salemnow.com, where you can see Created Equal, Clarence Thomas in his own words. And that's the film version, or just grab it in book form on Amazon or wherever fine books are sold. They are both called Created Equal, and it's Michael Pack in the great company of Clarence Thomas. And what a joy to talk to you, especially here in this season where Justice Thomas could be leading the way toward returning to a constitutionality on Roe v. Wade and a lot of other cases as well. So congratulations and good luck to you, sir, and I really appreciate you today.
Thank you very much. Great talking to you.
That is Michael Pack, Created Equal, in book or film form. 9:25. All right. The vigil continues. So as we keep an eye and an ear peeled for the possible, for any of the big rulings, big exhale, we are done. It will not be today. It will not be today. under ordinary circumstances, that'd be it for the week. Under ordinary circumstances, that'd be it. But we've been given a bonus day. Where'd that come from? And I think this is a John Roberts call that and I don't know if we're being trolled or if they're going to try to dump the Dobbs case on us tomorrow on a Friday as the week comes to an end so they can pack their stuff and head off to Timbuktu. I don't know. There's supposed to be more rulings due next week and maybe even thereafter. So those who know aren't talking and those who are talking don't know. So that's why I've always said, let the game come to us. The game has come to us today. And as we hop into the bottom of the hour, news burst with Nikki Whaley in for Gordon Griffin. Today's rulings are complete. The Roe-based decision, the Dobbs case out of Mississippi, will not be announced today. Huh. Okay, so what will we do? Well, I got two things in my mind. I'm going to go to your calls, 866-660-5759, on any of the crazy things in the news today or anything you want to bring up. Also, Utah Senator Mike Lee was on Laura Ingraham last night because in the midst of the Cornyns and the Romneys and the McConnells and these other folks willing to savage your Second Amendment rights in order to do something, they've stepped right into the do something trap, and they've done it willfully, and they don't care. And we'll talk a little bit about there's some senators from Mike Lee to Ted Cruz, thank you, to Rand Paul and others who do care. And so we'll talk about what the differences are between those groups of Republican senators. 9:33, Mark Davis, into the newsroom we go. Here's Nikki Whaley. Well, all right, with that breaking news, and no, it's not the Dobbs case out of Mississippi. It is the New York State case in which the overlords there in the Empire State had a gun license requirement that was just too restrictive. It was simply too restrictive. It was called the proper cause requirement, where officials in New York. So step A is you say, hey, I'd like a gun to protect myself because I live in New York or for whatever reason. All right. And then authorities are impaneled to see if you have a proper cause to need to defend yourself. Like that's their business. This was a case called New York State Rifle and Pistol Association, Inc. v. Bruen, B-R-U-E-N. And the gun grabbers are in full meltdown. This is so wrong. This is so wrong. Complete immorality at a corrupt gun-loving SCOTUS. This is not about whether the Supreme Court justices own guns, like guns, enjoy shooting guns, blah, blah, blah. And you know why the left can't figure this out? It's because that is how they view court rulings. They want Justices Breyer, Kagan, and Sotomayor to vote against this or to vote for the state of New York because they hate guns. That's what they want their logic to be. Guns bad. Vote that way. Wait a minute. What about the Constitution? Guns bad. Vote that way. Whereas the constitutionalist perspective is not based on the converse of that logic. I like guns. I'm pro-gun. I'm pro-NRA. I like shooting. I own guns, blah, blah, blah. So I'm going to vote against the state. No, that's not what it's about. It's about what does the Constitution say? What does the Constitution say? I could say this 47 times a day. Sometimes I feel like I do. And that is that the constitutionalists on the Supreme Court are not ruling based on their personal wishes, personal agendas, personal politics. They're ruling on what the Constitution says or does not say. Meanwhile, the liberal justices are all about them, all about their. That's why there's an enormous amount of narcissism to all this from Roe v. Wade, where it's like, well, we can't find a right to abortion in the Constitution. Please, hello, we have eyes. It's not in there. So we're going to invent it because we in our wisdom, our black-robed wisdom, we don't want the states to be able to tell a pregnant woman that she can't kill the baby. We don't want that. We don't want that. It is a massive exercise in self-absorption. So literally, just moments ago, one of my favorite analysis guys, George Washington University law professor Jonathan Turley, was on Fox News.
They have one, and it is an interesting point that you make. New York has been the gift that keeps on giving for gun rights advocates. They, like D.C. and Chicago, have lost major cases before the Supreme Court. This was a case that many of us wrote on when it was in the lower courts. I thought that it would result as it did today, that this was a case that clearly was unconstitutional under the controlling authority of Heller. And what you have in jurisdictions...
Real quick, Heller, you'll hear about Heller referred to all the time. That is the District of Columbia versus Heller, 2008, okay, 2008. And that of course, was the John Roberts court as well. But that was when Anthony Kennedy was there, John Paul Stevens was there, Antonin Scalia was still there. And the Heller case ruled that the Second Amendment does indeed protect individuals. Golly, glad the show's over because I can't talk anymore. It does indeed protect an individual's right to keep and bear arms. The point that had been made is, hey, you're not in a militia. That just has to do with militia. Yeah, guess what? No, it doesn't. Yeah, by the way, you know why that is, don't you? It's because we are all in the militia. I don't remember signing up. Yeah, there's no paperwork. There's no paperwork. We could be springing forth to form a militia. And by the way, I don't expect this tomorrow, even with Biden as president. I don't expect this tomorrow. But you never know. That is why you have to understand the Second Amendment is not about hunting. It's not about sport shooting. It's not even really first and foremost about self-protection. Although all of those rights exist, all of those rights emanate from your basic Second Amendment right. Second Amendment exists to thwart government tyranny. Not because the government is absolutely going to rise up and squash our rights tomorrow. It's so they won't even think about it. It's so they won't even think about it. An armed and free populace is the backstop against government tyranny. So the D.C. versus Heller case was, hey, guess what? You don't need to be like a card-carrying militia member to enjoy your right to keep and bear arms.
Like New York is a very strong gun control effort, but they often produce cases that, quite frankly, are welcomed by many gun mm-hmm. rights advocates because you can create, in their view, this was a bad case to make some good law, and they did so. This is a 6-3 wow. decision. You have Justice Thomas looking at the history of the Second Amendment, looking at the holding in Heller, and saying that the answer is clear, that you cannot impose this burden on gun owners to be able to carry a concealed weapon.
That is exactly what the state of New York did, and the Supreme Court, led by Clarence Thomas once again, has said, I don't think so. A large number of Republicans and conservatives especially are saying, I don't think so. In fact, I know not to the Cornyns, the McConnells, et cetera, et cetera. Senator Mike Lee of Utah was on with Laura Ingraham last night with a reaction to this gun bill.
I mean, look, this is a bill that we saw for the first time just a few minutes before we were asked to vote on it.
Was it a few
night.
Minutes?
Okay. A few minutes. Wow. A few minutes.
Okay.
And it was strange, though. Magically, the Washington Post had it by midday yesterday. We weren't allowed to see it until moments before we were asked to vote on it. Now, this is 80 pages. 80 pages is something you can read quickly if you're reading a fast-paced novel or a newspaper or something. As you know, legislative text takes a little longer to digest and fully understand. And a lot of their characterization of it didn't quite add up, and it still doesn't.
The red flag laws, kind of on the face of it, sounds like it's okay. Well, if someone's a danger, but isn't the problem when you give block grants to states to enact these red flag laws and administer them? What constitutes a danger? Could it be a posting that if you disagree on climate change? I mean, I don't know, depending on who the judge happens to be.
This is one of the problems with what Mark Levin describes as crony federalism, where Congress doesn't want to legislate it in an area, so we'll pay the states to do it. And we'll pay the states to do it in a way that gives us plausible deniability from whatever bad things they do. This doesn't contain any restrictions on their ability to infringe on due process, on Second Amendment rights. They could allow a coworker anonymously to report someone they don't like, and in some states that would suffice.
Now, a new poll from Trafalgar shows that about 46% believe that the red flag gun control laws have the potential to be abused by local authorities and government officials to disarm political opponents and or citizens who disagree with them. And 72% of Republicans believe that. Wow, that's a pretty pretty stiff majority of Republicans, given the fact that we have 14 prominent leadership Republicans voting for this legislation.
Sure. And it's doubly concerning when you figure that not only could they do that for partisan political reasons, regardless of what the reason is. I don't care what the reason is. If you're taking away a constitutional right from someone based on a mere accusation where there's not due process and an opportunity in court prior to the deprivation of the constitutional right, that's not due process. That's something
McConnell
else.
That is indeed something else. And as we come close to concluding, just so you're up to date on what is the latest way in which John Cornyn has insulted you, if you're an NRA member, the NRA's opposition to this is not constitutionalism. Oh, no, no, no. It's their business model. It's their business model. And if you just as a citizen are really vocally against the unconstitutionality of red flag laws, you're a mob. My heart hurts. It just does. John Cornyn is lost. And keep hope alive. Hopefully some clarity. I mean, but I don't know. I always hope for clarity, and we'll see what happens. 9:50.
Dolan River in the San Fernando, down in the valley in the shadow of green.
How many country artists are actually born in Nashville? Usually you got to get there. Here's a lady who is. Matresa Berg. It looks like Matraca, but it's Matresa. M-A-T-R-A-C-A. Matresa Berg. B-E-R-G.
Oh, Cumberland, I'm a faithful son. No matter where I run.
And this is a magnificent album from 2011 called The Dreaming Fields and Oh Cumberland.
St. Paul to New Orleans, my heart's resting on your banks.
For producer Rhonda K. Moreland on Twitter at producer Rhonda K, R-O-N-D-A, capital K. Thank you, Mr. Matt, for the technical guru skills. Thank you, Nikki Whaley, for filling in for Gordon in the newsroom. God bless our country, our troops, our families tomorrow. Friday, here we go. Could Roe fall tomorrow? We'll find out. We'll hang together and see what's going on. Enjoy the rest of your day. Stay cool, man. 147 degrees. It's insane. And I will try to keep things real, keep things under control on the Friday show tomorrow. See you then. God bless our country, our troops, our families. Mike Gallagher is next.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.